Okay. Welcome to the Access Show. My name is Ryan McMahon. I'm a lead program manager on the Access team. And today we have a special guest in all the way from Canada, an Access consultant. His name is Dick Moffitt. Dick, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you came to Access?
Okay, well, I started out as a spreadsheet specialist in the mid-80s.
Okay.
And I worked on 1-2-3, and then when Windows 3 came out, I worked on Excel and started doing conversions from Lotus to Excel. And then in 92, when Access came out, somebody gave me that and said, learn it. And so I did. And so since then, I've done Access and Excel for corporations. So that's a total of 25 years in the business.
Wow.
To full-time with Access. And what I do, what I believe in, is that the sweet spot for Access is what I call departmental applications in corporations, where their needs and their budget are not big enough to justify a full-featured IT solution. Right? And that's where so I like to say I do small apps for large companies, so, including your own company, for that matter.
Yeah, so Dick actually helps us at Microsoft and a bunch of different departments do that. And
right.
We've talked a lot about Access being this department modeler, a way to model a process and department and build up these smaller applications.
That's right, because the need for those is very large, and the budget for those is not as robust as larger enterprise applications, right?
And the speed too. I think a lot of it is how long does it take you to get from we need to manage this process to actually having something running,
which also affects the cost.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Totally.
So it's and there's the flexibility issue, the issue of they want to change things inevitably. Access is great for that.
Yeah.
Right. And the there are people who say you shouldn't maybe, but frankly, the client is the client and they want to change, and within Access you can effect changes easily and better. And in fact, now what we're going to talk about today with Access Services, it's an even better story.
Well, great. Yeah, we're excited to have you down here to talk about that. So I'm going to give a little slight bit of a background, and then we'll get into kind of talking about 2010 and some of the stuff that you're using in it. In Access 2007, we made kind of the first step in moving applications up into SharePoint. You've actually worked with some of that stuff as well.
Yes.
A few years ago, and that's letting you take your tables and move them up. That had a bunch of challenges around scale and how many records you could have. So in this release in 2010, we kind of went one step further, and we brought the data up in a much more performant way back and forth. We also bring your entire application definition up. So in previous kind of Channel 9 shows and on the blog, we've talked a lot about web applications, the applications running fully in the browser. What we're going to talk about today is a little different. It's taking the power of Access, all of the richness of the rich client, and marrying that with the server to give you a new kind of experience, a new kind of application that gets around one of the inherent problems with Access, which is being file-based, it was harder to share and harder to manage and harder to deploy.
And the other issue with being file-based is your users, if they didn't have access to something like SQL Server or Oracle, they had to be within some proximity to the data.
Yep.
Otherwise, the performance went, right? And so this new paradigm, as we'll talk about and explain, solves that for the kind of apps we're talking about.
Yeah. So we should just do it through the demo. So I think we should just start going through it. And as we go through parts of the demo, we can kind of stop and call out what's actually happening behind the covers.
Okay. Go for it.
All right. So do you want to open up your app?
Well, what I have here on this screen is an application that I've created for your company, actually, and I've changed the data to protect the guilty. And
Dick always has very cool names that he puts in the sample databases so we can show us that are...
Yes. So,
you'll see some of those
in a second.
So hopefully
you'll see some funny ones. The idea of this database is to keep track of a group of people, in this case a council of people that the company wants to keep in touch with, and is what they're interested in technology, so that they can decide who to invite to a get-together, right? So you're saying, okay, we have, how many people in the world are interested in Access? So we have like 3 people on the list. No, I'm just kidding. But we have, they can pick people by region, by interest, blah, 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 and it keeps track of who they are, what their job is, their address, their email, et cetera.
Cool.
It's a very important thing for your company to keep in touch with this. So what I've got here is this is an incredibly simple app, which is nice. So you got to like that. And so it has a table for members, the list of members. It has a table for the interests that they could conceivably have, Is this right to point like this? Probably, yes.
Yeah, let's do it.
But interests they conceivably have. And then the table that's the cross table that matches the two. It's the classic many-to-many relationship shows up here because you could have many members with many interests,
yeah,
et cetera, right? And then we have some couple of queries that support that. And then we have some forms that present it.
Yeah.
And I went with an auto exec, which is I'm just used to using, right, as opposed to a default form to come up because I can do things in the auto exec as it's loading.
Exactly.
Now, what I've done is I built this as a web app. Therefore, the actual design of this, if I were to go and create a new database, you would see that it's not a blank database. It started as a blank web database. Now, in order to do this one, it started from scratch, so I had the luxury of doing it from scratch.
Yeah.
But if you have an existing app, what I do is I create a blank web database, and then I import all my objects from the original regular ActDB file.
Interesting. So one of the things that with the web databases in 2010 is you can have web objects, which once you publish will actually render and run fully in the browser.
Right.
But you have all your old existing client objects, the richness of the complicated forms, complicated reports, complicated queries with aggregates, all the things that you've come to know with Access come forward. And actually run in the client, and we'll kind of go through that as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So that in a perfect world, you bring everything from your existing app into this new configuration, but it looks exactly the same and acts exactly the same too.
Yeah.
You really don't need to do anything of significance to the queries and forms and reports if you don't want to add any of the new value. But there is changes you will see in the tables. Right?
Yeah.
There are considerations in the tables, but they're definable as to what they are, and they're manageable.
And we also have a compatibility checker, so you can take one of your databases and you can run it, and it'll tell you what's wrong with it. What are the big ones? I mean, I know that we've heard a lot. Some of the ones that we kind of call out are you can't have composite keys. SharePoint doesn't support composite keys. So what we're really doing is we're moving the data model into SharePoint, and that means we need to constrain our data model part to what is supported in SharePoint. So it now supports relationships in SharePoint, but only on numeric keys, not on text-based keys.
But on the other hand, you can code your way around those changes instead. I mean, yes, there's no question you have to really probably work on some of those changes depending on your app, but you can code your way around them, and sometimes you can actually make the changes. And it's one of these things where once you've done it a few times, you know exactly what to look for. And
yep.
It's just, okay, I have to do a conversion, I have to visit my tables, I have to look at my primary keys, I have to look at my relationships, I have to look at my now lookups. And it's just a question of your experience. And it's not an insurmountable problem. That's the point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it becomes an issue if you have 10,000 tables, but that's just tedium. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, the actual work involved is definable and is doable.
Because I know when we, in 2007, when we first moved the data model across,
mm-hmm.
SharePoint didn't support any kinds of relationships. And mm-hmm. so now in 2010, a bunch of the basic building blocks of relationships are there. You can get RI if you have on number-based keys,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
I think is pretty popular these days in terms of all new databases they have. They go with numeric keys.
Right, yeah.
So it's some of the older constructs of text-based keys and composite keys. That you can work around using things like data macros.
You can use data macros to work that. And remember, there's another important thing. If your application is only going to run in Access, you're going to live with this client-based version we're talking about, you can use VBA to enforce that.
Yeah.
It's not perfect because the data macros and the base built-in ref integrity is at the table level.
Yeah.
Therefore, you don't have to worry about it. Set it and go
set
about
it,
your business,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Okay. But you can do it with code, right? If you want to, I don't have any problem with that. It just means that you don't want people going into your tables raw, but you don't want that anyway,
yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
So let's open this app up and take a quick look at it.
Okay. The idea behind this database then is that you have a list of people here, and you have their names and their organization name, their job title, etc. Like I say, I've removed that all this information and changed the names to protect the guilty, as I said. And in this case, I've only got like 65 names because I only had so many funny names. But the original database in this case has 650 people. It ends up being a perfect small access application.
Yeah.
But I have other applications that have like 5,000 people, and I'm using it in this same exact concept with the client.
So it's not just small volumes of data applications. No. You can have larger volumes of data and it still works.
Yeah, and so the question is how large? That's up to you at this point. You guys have done tests on it, and you keep telling me, don't worry about it, Dick. Don't worry about it, Dick.
But they're going bigger.
Yeah. And because of the hybrid, it actually, we should talk about how that works to your advantage, because you're actually, most of your work is on the client.
You're really leveraging local process.
Right, you're really doing it. You're not torturing the poor SharePoint server that much, unless you're doing a large update query of some sort, right? Which is something you don't do all that often. Or if you're going to do a lot, maybe you should think about some other technology. So in this case, I can pull down, and it's actually choosing this person. Now, if I pick a person, Betty Hatchett. Let's find somebody who actually is interested in something. This person, bright and early, all right, is interested in unified communications, right? They're also, they could also be interested in certain scenarios. I have, again, the one-to-many relationship between the member and this. So then the same thing on the interest side. As I click down these interests, you can see the people on the right who are interested in it. So, and then you have a set of reports that are, and again, these are all built and all driven using Visual Basic for Applications.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's the really important thing. And this is running now on my local machine.
Yep.
And we are going to publish it to SharePoint, but as far as me being a user, it's going to look exactly the same. And as far as me being a developer, it's virtually exactly the same. So all the skills I brought with me, I mean, of course, we're all willing to learn new things.
Yeah.
But the point is to learn all new things is a bit much.
Exactly.
Therefore, in this case, you can use 99% of what you know about access.
And then you can start to pepper in new stuff into your application.
New stuff as you go along.
Awesome. All right,
let's go for it. So now I'm going to open it again with the shift key held down so that it doesn't run the autos. What I'm going to do is go to this new file menu. To the backstage. Backstage, excuse my ignorance. Down on this backstage, you have all these, basically the file menu. But down near the bottom, you have a choice of save and publish, or save and or publish, I suppose it is, right? So you can save the database. There's various things you can do here. But this is what we're targeting. We're targeting publishing.
Yeah.
Now, if you create one of these applications inside, you cannot publish unless it's a web project to begin with. So it has to have been created as one of those web databases I showed you before.
So the other thing that you can do in that situation, too, is if you have an older database, you can actually go run Compatibility Checker on it, and you can publish it.
And as long as it passes,
it'll do all the conversion for you.
Right.
So you can either start from blank and import and kind of mess around if you want, or you can take an existing one, run Compatibility Checker, and once you fix any issues that you have and the data models matching SharePoint, you can just publish right from there.
That's
so it's
cool,
two different paths.
That's cool, but it's likely never going to work because your application is probably going to run into some walls. And so you're going to have to make a bunch of changes. So it is six of one, half a dozen
You either import a new one or you copy it and you tweak it, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have to make a couple adjustments in the data model, especially around lookups or field names,
like
that
we talked
kind of
about
thing.
Earlier. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's basically going to be cat and dog people, right? That's what we're talking about.
Totally, exactly. It's up to you.
So I'm one of these guys who starts spinning around. This is the secret here, is this Compatibility Checker. Such a nice little tool. It runs, and in this case, it runs very fast because this particular application already is compatible.
Yeah.
If it had found an issue, like a compound index, for example, or relationships that don't make sense to it, it would tell you there's an error. And there would be the web compatibility issues button here would become live. And when you click on it, it would show you a list of all those incompatibilities.
Yeah. And you can kind of go through one by one.
And then you can go through them and kill them, run it again, and then hopefully your list will get
smaller
rather than longer and longer, right?
Until it just
passes. Until you've gotten rid of them all.
Totally.
And the cool thing, too, is in there is actually a URL that goes theoretically to a help topic that's supposed to help you with that,
yeah.
right? And that, I assume, is going to be a growing scenario. It may exactly. become a development opportunity down the road.
Yeah.
But the point is, we've run the compatibility checker on this one, and it is ready to go. So yeah. let's just assume that we live in the best of all possible worlds. Down below here, here is the locations. It remembers the last place you published to, all the last places. So you don't have to type in, unless it's a new location you've never been to before, you can pick them.
Yeah.
So in our particular case, we're going to go to a new that site that is actually sub of an existing site. And then we're going to give this site a name. So what it's going to do is publish to a SharePoint site and create a sub-site
yes.
based on the name that we type. So I'm going to call this MembersDB.
Perfect.
Right? Now, I then hit publish. Now you'll notice how you have the, what do you call that? It's not an hourglass anymore. It's the round thing. What do you guys call that?
No, it's the it came in with Vista. It's
yeah,
the little small
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, you got to come up with a name for that.
We should. I'm sure there is a name. So what's kind of happening in the background here is we're taking all of those tables that you have,
mm-hmm.
and once we create the subsites, the subsite mm-hmm, is sort of mm-hmm, the equivalent mm-hmm. of the ACCDB. It's a one-time operation to go make the subsite.
That's right.
And we're taking all of those tables and data, and we're turning them into SharePoint lists.
And in fact, that's what starts now. You
yep.
see it says synchronizing web application for the first few seconds.
Exactly.
Or in, depending on the size of the app, minutes.
Exactly.
But it's never tens of minutes.
Yeah.
Right? It goes and thinks, and now it's modifying the list schema of each individual table and form, and
exactly.
now it's synchronizing the data in the tables.
And what's really cool with this, too, is if you had web forms, where you can make new web forms, we would be creating those web forms on the server.
That's right.
But that's a different talk.
That's
what we're actually doing here is we're taking in Access, inside Access, there's already a kind of hidden system table that has text versions of all of your objects.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we store them internally.
Sure.
We're taking those and we're now putting them up on SharePoint. So now not just your data, but your entire application lives in SharePoint and can be managed through SharePoint. And we're going to walk through kind of the advantages of that once we get this thing published.
Right. And you use the term. It actually, it resides on SharePoint. But it lives on your desktop once you've
synced it down.
Once you've synced it down.
Yeah.
And it syncs it down without any hassle for the user, but also no hassle for the developer.
Yeah.
Because it's as we'll see, it's just a single file, and then we'll see how the actual ACE or which runs on your local machine and also runs on SharePoint figures out what it needs to do.
Yeah.
And you've done that. And there's no code involved. It does it all automatically.
All right. Well, like a cooking show, we zipped ahead to the finished process of
just a minute.
Publishing.
Let me look in this oven here.
Exactly.
Yes.
So publishing, you know, I we look at it a lot like packaging. Traditionally, you'd have to package an app up before
That's
you
right.
deployed it.
That's
or in
right.
the case of another example that I use all the time is if you're upsizing the SQL, the initial process of upsizing takes a few minutes. And this probably took about 3 or 4 minutes, but
yeah.
we didn't want to kind of let you watch it go through the process. If the application's big, mm-hmm. it can take longer, but it's a one-time operation to move it up to SharePoint. Once it's there, any additions are all incremental, and we'll walk through how that works, but the performance is much better once it's up on SharePoint.
That's right, because what it's done is it's created from a blank slate the bones of your application.
Yeah, the
right?
subweb, all
Everything.
The lists, all yeah. the schema, all that stuff,
right.
it has to go create that.
What you probably will do as a developer in many cases is actually do this synchronization incrementally during your development process.
Exactly,
right?
yeah.
To test everything as you go. So it'll depending on how big a number of changes you have, it may take a little longer. But it's
yeah.
still a totally acceptable amount of time. And you end up with this sheet which says, dialogue, which says it succeeded. If it failed, you'll see that list, a URL to that list that shows where
that,
it failed.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah, you can
so it's pretty
those.
Neat. So when I go OK, it actually closes that and drops me back into the blank menu. So now what I can do is I can take you and show you this site, right? So let's go to HTTP. Have you been there lately?
Could be.
And it was
Access
2010 WAX /demos.
Yeah, perfect.
And you see the fact that after all these years, I'm still a two-fingered typist.
Me
anyway,
too.
So
too,
what's
so
happened is it. This is just a generic
SharePoint site.
SharePoint site. Now, you create your own SharePoint site, and you have to be the administrator of that SharePoint site in order to publish this too. You have to be an administrator.
So you have to be a designer.
A designer.
So in SharePoint, you have full control, which
is
like an admin.
There you go. I thought you had to be an
administrator. And then you can be a designer, which is one level below.
Okay.
And designers can publish.
Right.
And then contributors can actually edit the data in the application. They can use the application.
Right.
And then readers can just read the application.
Yeah. Right.
But you don't need to be a full admin. You only need to be able to create a site. And any designer...
And create objects on that.
Exactly.
Site.
Designers can create team sites. And if you can create a team site in SharePoint, you can create one of these.
Okay. See, I assume I'm always going to be an administrator.
Well, so you usually are, so exactly. So it's friction-free, definitely, as an administrator.
Me.
Yeah.
Now, what's happened here, this is a sub-site, and if I go to all site content, which is where I tend to go to look at things, this is the generic, I keep pointing up here, but this is the generic, let me use the mouse pointer, objects that are there in an original site. But if you go down here under Sites and Workspaces, this created a sub-site called MembersDB. And when I go into this site, what you're going to see is strictly a list of the objects that we just published.
Yes.
All right? And so you can see tables, forms, reports, queries, macros. Everything is going to be visible in here, and you as the developer are going to explain what we're looking at here.
Yes. And what's great here, too, is you can see who last modified stuff. So as you start working through an application or you're doing stuff, you can see when it was last modified and who modified it.
In my case, it's always me.
Exactly.
Right.
All right, great. So before we show you how it works on another computer, we're just going to show you one of the ways that you can get that file to somebody. So in this case, you couldn't just use the URL. Let's go to, I've got it on my little share here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to assume that someone emailed it to me. I'm actually going to copy it and put it on my desktop. Great. So now I'm on a totally different machine. You sent me this file. I'm going to go ahead and open
it. And the only evidence of that file is this ACTW file. At this moment in time, that's all you have.
Yep.
And you got it in an email.
So now when I open it up, what's going to happen in the background is it's going to hit that server, SharePoint. It's going to sync the whole application down locally to my machine. So now it actually, at the end, creates an ACCDB, an actual access database, in my My Documents folder. So now in my My Documents folder, I've got my access database, and it's actually connected directly to SharePoint.
Did you notice how fast that was?
Yeah.
Although, admittedly, you're on a corporate high-speed machine, it still was seconds.
And compared to publish.
Compared to publish.
Yeah, because now we've created all the stuff.
Now, if you have a big application with a lot happening, it will take longer.
Yep.
But never an excessive amount of time.
Exactly. And so now we've got the full database here, and I'm just going to enable
content.
The content,
yes.
And we'll just kind of hide that, give us some more room. And here we are. We're now working, looking at that same database I'm running locally in my machine. Now, if I bring up the things, what you'll see is now when I hover over that, it's connected to
that's a key thing.
To SharePoint now. So we see that it's actually living up on that website.
Whereas before it was a native inside the ACTB file, local. Now it's actually pointing. It's a linked file, but it's not. It's a native linked file.
Exactly. So now when I go ahead and open these things for the first time, it's actually getting the data from the server.
Off SharePoint.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. You said for the first time.
Yeah.
This is not a big set of data. The first time you ask for information in a table, it looks for it and it brings down the table.
Exactly. So it's kind of like a smart cache. So
yes.
When we sync the app up, instead of syncing the app up and getting all the data that could be in the database, we don't. We wait until a query calls
it
or a form calls it, and then we go get what we need.
Right.
But what the great thing is now that I've gotten it, when I want to go do stuff to it, so I want to go do sorting, I want to do filtering.
It's local.
It's local. So I'm not going back to SharePoint anymore.
If you want to do reporting, it's local.
Yes.
This is the really important thing, so that once you've got everything on your local machine, you're working locally. You're not putting stress on that SharePoint site. You're
not
round-tripping. The only thing you're round-tripping is changes.
Yep.
CRUD. Right?
Yep.
Usual CRUD activity.
And every time you access a data object, like a table, when you open it, we'll do a quick check on the server. And we'll say, hey, server, any new records? And if the server says nope, we run it. If the server says yes, we just get those records. So instead of the old model in 2007 where you'd get the whole thing every time, now we're always checking with the server to make sure we have the latest data, because it's very important that you have the latest data. But we're only trafficking across new things. we're not trying to bring everything over.
Therefore, if you have a classic departmental application that's only used by 10 or 20 users and they're not on it all the time,
yeah.
you may never notice
yeah.
any delay when you open a new form, even though it's got new information
exactly.
that it is synchronized.
It just kind of works.
And the really important thing, I get to look right at you and tell you this, is it's free. And by free, I mean there's no code to do what he just described. That is baked into the application and is provided by Access 2010.
Yeah.
And that's, I consider that cool.
So let's actually go try you changing something and me seeing the results of those changes without having
sure.
to redeploy and go, and you don't have to go update the database and do all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
You can just kind of work it. So we're going to close this down
mm-hmm.
and save yes.
You see, because
close that down.
The application is hosted on the SharePoint site, I, as the developer, can make changes on my client version, which I have, and then when I synchronize it with the server, it becomes available immediately for anybody who either comes into the application or even comes into the form,
yep.
right? And that is done immediately. So what we're going to do is make a change. And let me show you what we're going to change.
So in the old world, just before we
yeah.
do that, in the
mm-hmm.
old world, what I used to do, I remember having to do a lot, is I would have to have some complicated bat file, and
yeah.
I'd have to have folders for every single user. And when I made a change, I'd have to say, everyone get out.
Mm.
Or when I double-clicked it, I'd have to have code that said, go check and see if you're the latest,
mm-hmm.
and then get the latest database. It was always a pain to do deployment. And I found I was doing things over and over and over again. So this really kind of helps smooth that process.
Because some people made money doing that by building toolkits and selling them, or by charging clients for setting it up.
Yeah.
Right? And that's all well and good, but this is so much better that it's just undeniable. This is instant and it's free. Now, here's a perfect example. And I had this last week on another application where I had a user where her text box was not long enough when I built the app. Therefore, the entries she entered were longer than I had anticipated. Isn't that often the case?
Yeah.
So
she
wanted a wider combo box. So what I did, and here in our case, we're going to have a narrower combo box. Because when you pull this list down, you notice how nobody's really going
yeah.
over halfway through. So what I want to do here is, as the developer, I'm going to exit out, and I'm going to go back in, and I'm going to open this ActDW file.
Yeah. So now you're going to open it up on your developer
That's right.
machine, and we're going to actually make a change.
That's right. Now, the file itself, the actual local copy, is stored on my local machine in the My Documents library in a folder created by Access called Access Applications.
Yeah.
Now, as a developer, I have the rights to edit that, but that's where your user's local cache is also going to be.
Yeah.
But they don't need to know that, right? In fact, they shouldn't know that. The what they should be doing is going from this file, which is an ActDW file, which is the one you downloaded. So if I hold down the Shift key and open that, it will bypass my auto exec,
yep.
is how I do it. Different people do it different ways. And now I'm actually in my local cache.
Yeah.
Because I am the developer of this, I can make changes. So let's go here to the members form, and let's figure out which control we're going to change here. Okay, here it is. Maximize this. I'm going to take this find control and I'm going to line it up with these others so that it looks nice, right? Okay. And I'm going to drag this over here. And my find and my filters are the same exact size.
Yeah.
So I'm going to save this just like I would normally. So I'm in the standard design mode in my usual Access front end.
Yeah.
Then I go to the file menu. And I hit this green button called Sync All.
Yep.
Because I'm attached to the server, when I hit Sync All, it will run through and say, oh, what's changed? And it will then, in a millisecond, it has changed.
Sync those changes back up.
So when I go to members now on this version, it is showing that my combo box is smaller. But now, Ryan's going to go to his.
Yeah, so now I'm on my machine.
Right.
You let me know, hey, I made some changes.
Exactly.
Or I don't even know.
That's right.
I open up my database.
Right. And it synchronizes.
Now it's synchronized.
And it comes up.
And I click members, and now my thing's smaller. Yep.
Now, think about what happened. Even though Ryan and I are sitting right next to each other, even though both of these machines are actually in Redmond, the server itself is in Redmond. But it would be exactly the same story if you were in Hyderabad.
And you've done this.
Or if you were in Japan.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about
that? Yeah, well, I have done this. I did this exact thing with a girl in Texas, and I was in Canada. I did an install last week with a girl in Hyderabad, India, and it was no different than if I was doing it to somebody in Texas, okay? As long as they have high-speed internet access, you send them the ActDW file, they run it, it goes through everything, and it does it just as fast no matter where you are in the world. So suddenly, instead of being limited to an ActDB backend that's got to be on a subnet of a router in a building in order to have any decent performance, right, you've now suddenly got this application available anywhere in the world that a person has high-speed internet.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the world.
And then there's that connection between, you know, it's not just being connected to the application, it's you're getting the benefits of the local store. So you're getting the benefits of Access Client being able to work very fast against the local store because the local store is now automatically talking back and forth with the server. So you're not choosing client or server. You're not going everything up in SharePoint. You're actually leveraging the power of your computer and Access native connected up to SharePoint to get all that manageability.
Yeah, and in fact, to think about it, how many times have we done that as developers? You develop an application using the local version, then you split the back end and the front end and put it on the network and it slows right down, right?
Yeah.
We've all had that happen. And then you have to go and talk to IT and get a SQL Server database, and then you have to recode and all that stuff. And I'm not saying that SQL Server's a problem. In fact, there's a SQL Server story we can talk about involving this potentially as well.
Yeah.
Where instead of having your data in SharePoint lists, you could have your data in linked SQL Server tables,
yep.
Yet you still publish it to SharePoint. So all of your forms and all of your ports and all of your queries are exactly the same, but when it rehydrates on your desktop, it will reach out to SQL for the data.
Yep.
And it's exactly the same
story. So in the way that you're using this a lot, the best way to think of it is it's a new way to deploy front ends. Now, the back end could be SharePoint. It could be SQL.
Yeah.
It could be another Access database. It
sure.
could be whatever data source that you're comfortable using.
You're in a competitive product.
Yeah, but you are using SharePoint as a delivery mechanism
right.
to manage your application, your whole kind of life cycle
mm-hmm.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so a couple of things I want to talk about that you get once you're in SharePoint. One of them is permissions. So you can now use SharePoint site permissions to control who can see the application and what they can do with it. You can use designer rights to control who can edit the application. You can also use contribute rights to control who can edit and readers for who can read.
In fact, it's not that you can, it's that you do. That's a subtle difference in that. That's what you do. And people worry about, well, if it's out on the internet, you know, what's the security story? Well, the security story is, for one thing, if you're using this, it's behind the firewall in your case anyway. But even if you're exposing it on the internet, say you use a hosting service like Access Hosting or something like that, accesshosting.com, you can have your Access database living out in the cloud, so to speak, right? And then anybody can access it. But your permissions are assigned in as the SharePoint administrator inside SharePoint 2010.
And those permissions are enforced not only in the server but also in the client.
On the client.
So if
somebody has the ActDW file, if somebody gets in a copy of the ActDW file and they double click on it, it'll reach up here and say, "Who are you?"
Yep.
And if you're not on that list,
you're not. Yeah.
You get nothing.
You're not getting it.
Yeah.
Right? And if you're a reader, you can't edit data. And if you're not a designer, you can't change.
You can assign there to different groups in your SharePoint site.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you can still use the kinds of things that I use, where I use logins to determine which form to present the user when they open my app based on their NT or their Windows login, right?
Yeah.
But there's no reason why you can't use it. In fact, it works exactly the same as before.
And one new thing you can do, actually, that's in Access 2010, which you should try out, is you can actually use the SharePoint credentials. There's a function in Macros called Current Web User.
Okay.
And so you can actually use that to customize based on the logins that they do to get to the database. You can just reuse that login as well. So you have a couple different options from the NT1 all the way up to
that. And that's especially useful if you're providing it outside the firewall, right? When you've got people coming in who are not on the domain, right?
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. There you go.
And then one of the other challenges you've also had with Access is because it's a file-based system and the files are living all over the place, how do you manage the backup and restore of that? And one of the advantages of the SharePoint is, now that it's up in SharePoint, mm-hmm. SharePoint's already being backed up by your IT managers. You can also do your own backup and restore, so you can backup and access site, and you can restore and access site all through SharePoint. All of that's living in SharePoint. Mm-hmm. So just much better reliability. Instead of worrying about where these files are and who's accessing them, you get the control back and the manageability back to really define how that application gets used.
Right. But the biggest, all of that is absolutely true, but the biggest story around that is the fact that suddenly you're free to stage your application and deliver it to any user anywhere, literally in the world or within your organization, as long as they have access to your SharePoint site, right? And have access 2010 or the runtime on their machine. They can use this and get the joyful feeling of using a local copy, which we've all enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
But we knew that we never could use it that way in the past, so we split them. Well, all of a sudden, we're getting that again for free.
You're really getting kind of the best of both worlds.
That's right, and there's an important thing. If you, over time, databases get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? The tables get fuller and fuller and fuller. But remember something, if that old data is inert and is not changing, it is going to be on your local machine and it is never going to change. Therefore, it's never going to be involved in any synchronization.
Yep.
It's not going to slow you down as it goes through time. The only thing that may happen is new users, if you have a large amount of data, will then take longer to install it.
Yeah.
But you saw here, it didn't take very long to install this. It
comes down pretty quick.
Right?
But sometimes the first run experience can be a little slower to get that cache.
Exactly.
Once you have that cache, now you're working totally locally and you get all those benefits.
And then if you clean up your data after the fact, say you go in and say at the end of 2 years you want to purge 3 years ago's data, you as the administrator go in to your version, you delete it. The next time people come in, the application on their desktop will clean that up for you one time. And what you do is what I have is a little window on my main applications with no announcements that I give to them. And I could say in there, oh, by the way, I've done a major function. This is going to take a long time the first time you run it. And you can train your users to understand that maintenance sometimes will slow it down. But again, it's a one-time thing.
Yeah.
It's a question of managing it, right? Therefore, I do not see this becoming a problem down the road for apps after their second and third and fourth year in activity. They're still going to snap, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it's one of the good advantages. You're kind of accruing value as you use it. And, you know, if you think about a common department, over a period of 24 hours, you're not talking about hundreds and 200 record changes.
No.
So you have very small incremental tax back and forth on the server. You're actually really optimizing for the local client and making sure that the server is not getting strained when it doesn't need to get strained.
And if you're accumulating this historical data on the client and it's not affecting performance, then your reports are better.
Yep.
Your user accessed information is easier because, remember, you're just talking to the local cache.
Yep.
You're not, so you can go back 4 years of data in the local cache. You're not touching SharePoint at all.
And that's one of the other advantages. I'll call this last one before we wrap up, and that's if you look at linked SQL tables versus linked SharePoint tables, advantages you're going to get with SharePoint is we do all this caching for you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you run the report on 30,000 records, it's only the first time you get those 30,000 that you take a bit of time. Once you have them, your reports are instant.
Instant.
Except when you're going against SQL, you're always linked to the data. So any other external data is not optimized as much, and you will still have the same performance you always had with a Access client connected to SQL. But you get advantages out of SharePoint in that you're reusing the kind of power of local jet.
Exactly. I mean, the story is, I'm having a problem.
ACE is it's called now.
ACE. I'm having troubles coming up with a gotcha on this. It is one of the interesting things I've found is it's also very self-repairing, right?
So why don't you tell us a little bit about the offline story that you told me?
Well, that was a good example. I have a client in Hyderabad in India. And she doesn't have a VPN, but she does work for your company. And she went, after I got her up and running, she said, can I take the computer home and work offline? I said, yes, go ahead. So what she did is she took it to her house and opened it without being connected to the internet.
Yeah.
Therefore, it automatically, by default, opened in a disconnected mode, which means everything is there And it works perfectly fine, but it's only using local cache.
Yeah.
So then she added 70 or so records. And the next morning, I got an email from her saying, can you check to see if these records are here? Because when I went to the office, I plugged in my computer, logged onto the network, and everything was there, and it said I was connected. So I went in Canada, and I opened it up, and boom, there were her 70 new records. And the opening of my forms was no different than the day before. Right now, it was admitted it was only 70 records, but that's very often the case when you're dealing with the kinds of access applications we're talking about.
And that's one of the advantages of using the ActDB as a local store is that you can disconnect, do a bunch of work, enter data, do all that stuff, and then when you connect, it'll just automatically kind of sync back up and push it up to the server for you. It's all very seamless.
And in so many cases, if you think about it, most access apps, you'll have an administrator who's responsible for the lookup tables and the lists and stuff.
Yeah.
Then your actual users usually are responsible for certain areas of the business, of the process. Therefore, they're not stomping on each other's records. They're not both editing the same record offline all that often. But if they do, you get the classic
conflict manager
comes up and you say, which one do you want to keep? And that's free. That's provided by Access automatically, and your users can walk through it.
Yeah.
Now, it may freak your users out the first time, but once you explain it, they get it and they understand.
And that's code that you, as a developer, didn't have to go
around
and
make.
It's just kind of in the system.
Right? Yeah. And so that, the whole synchronization story used to be pretty intimidating. What you're doing is you're doing all the synchronization for free in the background as an inherent functionality of the application.
Yeah.
That's big stuff.
And the only thing to remember around synchronization that we, often explain to people, too, is that it's a smart caching model. So when you open up that database like I showed you when we first opened it, we're not actually requesting any data until we hit it.
To ask for something.
So instead of you sitting there waiting for the entire thing to come down, if it's big, you're only kind of getting it on demand. Mm-hmm. Now what that means is if you download the application, unplug, and head off to somewhere to go work and you don't have the internet, you haven't actually gotten that data yet. So when you open up the tables, it's the local cache. It's not full yet. You won't have a cache.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing, as users, if you're using the app normally, if the normal kind of day use, you will never even notice this.
You'll never notice.
Right? But it is a thing to keep in mind that if you do want to go offline, as a developer, you can kind of write some stuff for it. Or as a user, if you just access some of the tables, they'll be there for you.
Right. Exactly. So you might want to have a button that says, I'm going to use this offline.
Yeah.
And then you have some code that touches every table so that everything gets pulled down.
Exactly.
If that's a core part
of your scenario. Yeah, what we generally find with offline is it's an occasional use, and it's usually the database you're using a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very similar model to Outlook, in that if you sync Outlook and you have a folder you've never, ever touched, until you touch it, they're not going to go do that to optimize. Otherwise, it would take you forever to kind of load all of your stuff in. And so we kind of have the same model here, and it's just something to keep in mind.
If you think about it, what you've done here is you've created in this. In fact, there's an argument about what you're going to call this. Is this going to be called a hybrid app, or is it going to be called a client-server app? It really is a true client-server app, but client-server is an old term, right?
Yeah.
And hybrid is a catchy term that would make sense to somebody who knows what it means, but wouldn't make any sense to anybody who hasn't heard it before. What do you call this?
Well, this is a great way.
What is the official line?
This is a great way to end our little session here with a call to action for all of you.
Mm-hmm.
Come to our blog at blogs.msdn.com/access. And tell us what we should call these.
Hybrid.
We've been calling them hybrid internally, and kind of that's the word we're using, but we'd love to kind of hear people's suggestions. What do you think they should be called? And maybe we can make a little contest about it or something. But we'd love to hear. Send your stuff in. And Dick, thanks a lot for coming. Always
thanks
a pleasure
for having
to have
me.
You here.
Yeah.
And thanks for watching.